It is. Very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on this wonderful day where the Green Party has said they're motoring ahead with those hate speech laws. If they can't beat you, they'll just shut you up. That's what they want to do, of course. Ireland bringing in probably the most Orwellian speech laws that cross Europe. And this is all to do with the EU digital treaty. We shall talk about that a bit later on as well. But speaking of shutting us up, when it comes to crime figures, it seems we've been shut up for a long time because we have seen a massive increase in crime over the last 20 years. Mind you, that's to do with the population increasing from 3 something million to 5.1 million. So certainly we are going to see proportionately an increase in crime. But some of those crimes are crimes we're not used to, are not familiar with. Knife crime, for example, is on the increase, massively on the increase. I mean, when was the last time that you saw people running around the streets with machetes? Well, certainly we wouldn't have seen it 10 or 15 years ago, but we see it quite a lot nowadays. Well, back in 2022, at the time, there was a bit of research done by the Irish Penal Reform Trust. Acting executive Molly Joyce said at the time, while the vast majority of foreign nationals and people with ethnic minorities do not come into contact with the penal system, these groups are disproportionately represented in both prisons and probation in this country. Now, I also read a piece from the same Irish Times article 2 years ago that said increased data sharing between agencies involved and increased use of technology in the court system are among targets cited in the Criminal Justice Secretarial Strategy, which is to run up to 2024. Now, this is 2024, and it still hasn't happened. In other words, what they wanted to do was combine data to suggest, you know, who's committing these crimes. Is it those who were born in Ireland, or is it those coming from other countries, other nationalities or ethnicities that are perpetrating these crimes? But here's the thing. Does it make a difference? According to the lefties, it doesn't. It doesn't matter who's committing the crimes because they're here anyway. So let's not point out where they happen to be from because it's not really important. And all it does is create a division in society and stigmatises ethnicities. They even suggested at the time that members of An Garda Síochána should be expressly required to record the racial or ethnic origin of a person during a stop and search. And stronger wording should be included in the Garda Síochána Search Powers Bill to prohibit racial profiling accompanied by detailed guidelines that are developed in consultation with relevant groups. Now, in other words, the point is, we do not, like the UK, keep statistics on the nationality or ethnicity of criminals because the left believe it's not important and that it stigmatises people. But is it wrong to keep these type of statistics? And do you think it creates a stereotype or creates division? Because that's what they will tell you. Now, Alex Phillips is a British TV presenter with Talk, and she is also a journalist. And her video went viral during the week when she pointed out this fact and her own experience as a woman. Let's have a little tiny clip of that video just to see what she was saying.
To coin a favourite phrase of the left wing, it has been my lived experience over the past 3 years or so that a lot of crimes happening against women especially seem to be committed by people who aren't from this country. I've been followed home with a man in one of those Afghan kolpol hats chuntering away in some language. All the way to my front door, I had to hide in my neighbour's house and pretend I didn't live in my house because he was lurking around outside trying to do indecent things to himself. That's right. I've also had my phone robbed off me by a Roma woman with a scarf on. And I'm like, yeah, what are we doing here? Who are these people? Why are we importing all this stuff? I cannot walk down the streets where I live anymore without weird men leering at me, making comments.
Weird men leering at me, making comments. Well, we did hope to have Alex, obviously, on video so we could chat to her, but we do have her on the phone because, unfortunately, for some reason, that is aspect isn't working on the show today. Alex, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and I do apologise for the inconvenience we caused today in relation to that video. Now, getting back to what we were saying, in the UK, same as Ireland, the lefties don't want us knowing the nationalities of people who commit crimes. Do you have any understanding of why we are so protective over ethnicity and nationality that we can't just face facts?
Well, I think it comes down to campaigning over the course of decades, really, whether it's stop and search and profiling at airports or so on and so forth, that we've become extremely lily-livered about this. We don't want to cause offence. We don't want certain communities to feel like they're being picked upon. We're very concerned about coming across as racist or xenophobic or Islamophobic, and we don't want certain communities to feel marginalised. And that is all very decent. I think the aims of that particular mindset are good. But it's got to the point now that we no longer see the wood from the trees. We are not looking at empirical evidence. We're not even gathering the empirical evidence. And so what has happened as a result, and I coined the phrase lived experience, a terminology that I absolutely detest. But it's funny, isn't it, that someone who is Black or Asian or Islamic or whatever can have their own lived experience, and we can say, oh, well, you know, this is what their situation has been like going about as a minority. But I'm not allowed mine. I'm not allowed to say, as a white woman of a certain age with blonde hair living in a less affluent part of London, that my experience is something which is uncomfortable. I've been completely silenced on this. But when you look at, like I said, we don't collect the data, the empirical evidence in this country. But when you look at reporting that's going on, whether we're looking at, you know, the grooming gangs that terrorize young teenage girls, vulnerable girls in northern towns and cities, the grooming gangs that were predominantly Pakistani men, whether we're looking at news reports coming out of Brussels, this is in recent weeks and months, Brussels and Paris, of gang rapes, again, happening at the hands of largely men from Middle Eastern or North African countries. The common denominator is that these are men who are from cultures who, frankly, do not hold women in high regard. And least of all, do they hold white women in high regard. They're probably taught from a young age that we don't respect ourselves and we're not to be respected. And at the same time, they're bombarded with pornography that probably reinforces that belief system. And it's having a real-world impact. We need to be able to talk about it.
And you mentioned in your video that, you know, gobby with the days, you know, we moaned about men, you know, on building sites, wolf-whistling women. And you go, well, this is a completely different situation because you don't feel as threatened. Now, I remember many years ago we had conversations on the air here and on the radio as well in relation to bringing in legislation to ban wolf whistling, which I always thought was the most ridiculous thing. Not that everybody should be wolf whistling at women. I think it's quite Neanderthal. But you said even at the time that, you know, wolf whistling wasn't too bad. In fact, every now and again, it made you feel quite good about yourself. But this is a whole new level of harassment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's about personal space and the feeling of threat. And if someone's whistling at you from a van, they're not near you, they're not actually approaching you, they're not trailing you, they're not getting into your personal space, they're unable to make physical contact with you, basically. Now, if any man, regardless of culture or ethnicity, comes up to you and follows you and harasses you, it is uncomfortable. As a woman, you're constantly there thinking, well, this person, if they wanted to, could actually physically dominate me. But what I'm talking about is what we have now is a culture where it has advanced beyond that. There are men who do follow you down the street, men who do constantly and persistently harass you, and they don't tend to be the men of originally this country. And it's not about colour of skin. This is about culture. And, you know, what I would say about this is women have been sort of taught over years that me saying I find it, you know, okay for a build to wolf whistle to me, but I don't want the man who, for me, discernibly hasn't been born and raised here following me down the street. You're almost taught to think, is that me being racist? Is this me having a different viewpoint because this person's English and this person I don't believe is English? It's not. Mm. It is the method of the harassment.
I mean, you even said in your video, because you had a good old rant, by the way, in your video, which has now gone viral, but you even said, I'm now probably going to be called a racist for even suggesting it. And that's what happens, because even in this country, we're not allowed to talk about it. We're not allowed to talk about these things. So much so, they're trying to bring in these Orwellian hate speech laws at the moment, which will shut us all up, or at least create a chilling effect that we'll all be afraid to speak. I mean, we have as big a problem as the United Kingdom, if not bigger, because over the last 3 years it has amplified even more, because since Rishi Sunak suggested they were all going to go to Rwanda, they left England and came to Ireland. So we have an even bigger problem at the moment. Now, of course, the Rwanda plan is now gone, thanks to Keir Starmer. Mind you, I don't know how long he'll last in power, but there's a good chance now that we should be able to send people back to the United Kingdom. I can't see our government wanting to do it because they pander to the left constantly all the time. So we have a glut of women who call me on a regular basis, particularly on the podcast, and say, I'm terrified walking around my own estate. My daughters are terrified because of men who you say, and I agree with you, have medieval beliefs when it comes to the treatment of women. But you're not allowed to say that, and i.e. you're not allowed to correlate statistics, or the Garda Síochána Conn, our police service, are not allowed to correlate statistics, because that stigmatises people, because we are told we must accept this is the way life is going forward.
Right. It's actually worse than this, because what you've got is the twin action of not only are we not allowed to talk about this, not only are we not keeping the empirical evidence, which we could then point to and evidence our claims, even though we know what is going on, we're also focusing, our societies and our public institutions are focusing on telling people that they have subconscious bias. They do all of this diversity training and they're sat there and made to say, you probably are racist. The thoughts you're having, even subconsciously, are probably because you are racist and prejudiced, and you have to second guess and check yourself all the time. Now, this, in my mind, is almost a sort of brainwashing to almost lose your senses, to lose your sort of common sense and be able to say, well, look, this person has clearly been brought up in a country of a different culture to me and is treating me in a way that I wouldn't be treated by somebody else. Oh my God, I can't think that. That must mean I'm a racist. It's so dangerous. And it's dangerous because we're teaching young women especially to forego their common sense, their gut instincts, to sort of abandon their survival mechanisms essentially.
But they don't want young women. They don't want young women racially profiling people. Isn't that exactly the reason they'll say they're doing this? That we don't want young women walking down the street thinking, there's a man who doesn't look like he's originally from this country, I'll walk on the other side of the road, and racially profiling people.
I mean, look, I think it's important to teach young people and, you know, any age person, frankly, that you shouldn't necessarily jump to conclusions about someone based upon the colour of their skin or their dress or whatever. I'm someone who has lived for a year in Kenya. I lived and worked in Ghana. I've lived in Cameroon. I've lived and worked in India. I've lived and worked in Pakistan. I spent a lot of time in North Africa. My previous relationship to date, one has been with an Iraqi, the other with a Cameroonian Algerian. So I definitely don't put myself in the category of somebody who is racist or xenophobic. I have huge global experience. I'm very open minded and like to push and purport that we should actually try and abandon prejudice, but not to the point of sacrificing women and girls' safety at the altar of political correctness. Mm. This is ridiculous. This is dangerous. And the problem is that women increasingly are sort of being expected to be these kind, meek, you know, I'm a pro-trans activist, despite the fact that a man can put on a frock and come into a woman's changing rooms, you know, or refugees are all welcome, despite the fact that this, you know, 14-year-old kid from a war zone is going to want to rape your daughter. You know, it's mad. And it's
But you lot just voted for a prime minister who is not too sure whether a woman has a penis or not, and is quite happy to get rid of the Rwanda plan, and seems quite happy to have as many people come into Britain as possible.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is my argument exactly. It's interesting reading some of the comments underneath the thing that went viral, the video that went viral. There are a lot of women saying, look, I'm so glad you're saying this. You're being a voice for me. And there's a lot of men saying, well, you know, women voted for this. And in part, they do have a point. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I never have. I'm a former Brexit Party MEP and was part of Reform UK. I've always been on a certain political side of the fence on this.
Why do you think so many people voted for Keir Starmer? Was it just because they didn't like Richie? Was this just a vote of opposition or a vote of anti-establishment? I mean, when most of them knew what he stands for, I mean, he's the biggest lefty you can come across.
I mean, look, it's not exactly an anti-establishment vote, is it? That is the establishment. They voted for the establishment in droves. Well, actually, they didn't vote for the establishment in droves. So let's look at this.
Reform got 14%. They did okay, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the Labour Party got fewer votes in this election than in the previous two elections that they lost. This was a collapse of the Conservative vote, and under first-past-the-post system, basically when people feel that it's a binary choice, the Labour Party have ended up cashing in big time. But they've got 34% of the votes and 68% of the seats. So let's not look at this as a huge Labour triumph and people going, my gosh, we really want the Labour Party. It's so ingrained in people's minds that you've got to choose Conservative or Labour, and that's reinforced in the media, who's going to be the next Prime Minister, Sunak or Starmer, that people sort of don't then vote for smaller parties. But in this election, the smaller parties have got more votes. The tide is turning.
I mean, do you predict, by the way, I have a prediction, by the way, that Keir Starmer won't last long. And I have a prediction, I have a bet on with a friend of mine for a meal out, by the way, for two people, that by next March, Nigel Farage will be the Prime Minister of Britain. That's just my prediction.
Oh, that would be my hope. I mean, look, Nigel called this a long time ago. I used to be his right-hand woman. We were in regular contact and having lunches and discussing strategy. Mm. We were talking about whether this would be the election he makes a comeback. And a while ago, he said, one of the easiest thing would be if I sort of cool my heels and we end up with a hung parliament, so I don't damage a Conservative Party too much, because that way we'll end up with proportional representation, because Labour has to get into bed with the Liberal Democrats, and under proportional representation, we can clean up.
Yeah.
And then he started to look at the situation and said, well, the country is in such a mess. The Labour Party are not going to do anything different to the Conservative Party. The Conservative Party are going to fight like rats in a sack in opposition, trying to discern what the ideology of that party is. And this is where, if we can just get a bridgehead into Parliament, that is something we can build upon. It's still an uphill struggle. You know, under our voting system, it's still going to be very hard. But watch this space, because he often is one of the best readers of the political tea leaves. And I hope he's got it right this time.
Well, somebody said to me the other day, if you had a different voting system similar to Ireland, which is proportional representation, Nigel probably would have got about 72 seats. So it would have been...
Yeah, pushing up on 100 odd, actually. Yeah. And also the thing is, it'd probably exceed that, because one of the things that is a suppressant of the number of seats smaller parties get is, like I said, people think it's a fait accompli that you've got to choose between two, yeah, and a vote for a smaller party is a wasted one. If we had a proportional system where people knew if they voted, whoever it may be, Lib Dems, Green, Reform, SNP, mm, Plaid, that would transfer into, yeah, lots of seats, and that vote share would actually go up again.
All right. Well, look, in the interim, we should just live and learn and hope, keep our fingers crossed that at some point, we face up to the fact that there is disproportionate amounts of people who are not nationals of the country, both in Britain and here in Ireland, going to jail for crimes, and that women must be kept safe. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Alex, and I appreciate you joining us today.
My pleasure.
There you go, Alex Phillips, who is a Talk TV presenter. Well, when I say Talk TV, they're online now. Used to be with GB News and also with Reform UK, and TV presenter and journalist Alex Phillips. And her argument is, similar to Ireland, why don't we keep statistics in relation to the nationalities of people who commit crimes? Because after all, surely that's important, isn't it? Well, the lefties say it's not important. Let me know what you think, 085 122 55. Edward, is it important?
It is, but we can't do it, and for obvious reasons. And I think you've already touched on that here earlier on in the conversation. I mean, you'd be accused of rampant Islamophobia, Niall, among other things, and inciting hatred. And I'm going to jail anyway the minute that law comes in, and probably you are too. So we might.
We could be cellmates. Yeah, the two of us. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, we could. But what we have now, what we're importing here is what I would paraphrase as a Muslim pandemic. Dangerous people. I've already touched on this online in relation to the Tory Towie case, which you may have seen.
That's the case that the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach have said they're going to intervene. The lady in Dubai who was the victim of domestic violence, a horrible case actually, the victim of domestic violence, she's now banned from leaving the country, for those who don't know the story. But here we are intervening in another country's legislation. And let's be clear, anybody who goes to Dubai or goes to that part of the world on a holiday or on a visit or whatever it happens to be, you know the rules. You know the way they behave. You know the laws. That's just it, isn't it? There's nothing we can do about it. And I think if we intervene, it'll be just making things worse, because then out of a point of principle, I think they'll turn around and tell us to piss off and mind our own business.
Well, look, I wrote a book on the subject which was subsequently banned. I can't go back there. I've said things about their regime which I refuse to retract. I've had death threats made to me, and I'm continually.
But I don't understand that. I'm not familiar with your book, Edward. But when people say to me, "God, isn't it horrible? Isn't it wrong that if you're caught, kissing in public, for example, that you could, essentially be arrested? Or if you're caught, drunk and disorderly, not like Ireland where you just get a guard by telling you to go home, you could be arrested." And I go, "Well, no, that's their rules. That's their laws. If you want to go there, that's the way you behave." The same way as we would expect here in Ireland, if you come from another country, we have traditions, we have rules, we have laws, we have morals. That's the way you behave in this country.
That's fine, in principle. I mean, let them do what they like and say what they like and behave as they like. But what we're doing, Niall, is much more critical. What we're doing is importing that culture into our own ranks here.
That's the problem.
We have them floating around the streets, assaulting women, treating the majority of women, as far as they're concerned, who wear anything above the knee are prostitutes. So let's be clear about that. That is a fact. And the imams, the religious leaders, describe them as such. Western women are prostitutes. It's horrendous. the way they view us. But that is their culture. That is how they've been brought up. They've been brought up with this narcissistic belief that women are objects, women are to be possessed, and they have no greater value than a herd of goats. Now, when you look at that in context, and you look at the more, even the more educated among them, we had a doctor there recently who was jailed for 9 years for raping his own wife. And when the Gardaí arrested him, he said, well, what about? For what? He was nonplussed as to why they would dare even challenge him on this question. She managed to escape. He's now in jail. But that, again, comes from an educated man who is a Muslim. His wife, he could rape her ad nauseum as he wished when he liked. Outrageous. But again, another...
Here's the thing, Edward, and to be fair and to be a level of balance, I would like to think that if people who are Muslim, who come from other territories, where a lot of it is cultural, apart from being religious, right, when they come to Ireland, that they assimilate into our cultures, as well as keeping their own identity, and I'm not saying people shouldn't keep their identity and their roots, but they assimilate into a culture where that culture, where their religion doesn't fit into that culture, or their interpretation of the religion doesn't fit into that culture, and as such, they must adjust. And then, and maybe not they, but certainly the next generation of their family, their children, will be raised in Ireland and say, well, okay, you can't behave here the way you might in Saudi Arabia, for example, or you might in, you know, the United Arab Emirates, or whatever it happens to be, that you can't behave in Ireland in that fashion, and you must treat women as first-class citizens, not second-class citizens.
No, they cannot do that, Niall, and they will not do that, and there's very specific reasons for that. The Quran dictates otherwise. For them to assimilate into our society and embrace our culture means going against the teachings of the Quran. Now, I won't get into that because...
I don't want to get into it, but that depends, of course, on the interpretation. And there are, just like there are many people who interpret the Bible very differently, there are many people who interpret the Quran very differently too.
But this is why within various parts of London, they have simply refused to assimilate. They've refused to integrate. They live within a parallel system. Near the train shall meet. These cultures will not embrace ours, and we will not embrace theirs. So what we've got is we've got effectively many citadels, whole communities of Muslims that live within their area, catchment area, and nobody would dare encroach upon them. We're importing that into Ireland here simply because the Quran demands that they adhere to this.
Oh, we're losing your phone there, Edward. Sorry, move back to your phone. Sorry.
You shall not embrace another culture. You will take over, is what it dictates. Mm. You will get us to assimilate into their culture, not the other way around, no matter where you reside.
But again, that depends on how seriously somebody takes their religion. And if you take, 40% or 50% of Irish people don't take religion seriously, they don't practice their religion. They might be down on a piece of paper as a Catholic, but they don't practice their religion. They don't go to Mass every day. They don't sit down and pray every day. Just like many Muslims in this country don't practice their religion. They go out for a drink.
They're an exception.
Yeah.
That's the exception rather than the rule, because it's a very, very controlling religion. You can't leave it without fear of threat of annihilation. There are so many restrictions on that religion you would not believe. I mean, I could write another book on the subject, Niall, but sure I won't go into it here today.
Back to the question that we originally started out on, because I think that's an important question today is, 2 years ago, there was a suggestion that we start to record, racial and ethnic origins of people involved in crime or stop and search with the Garda Síochána. But of course, the left said, no, this is not important because all that does is encourage racial profiling. So let's not do that. Do you think it's important to record, the ethnicity or the nationality
of
somebody who commits a crime?
Of course I do. Of course I do. But to implement that is virtually impossible. You're going to have every human rights and NGO organization coming down on you like a ton of bricks. It's simply not workable. It's not tenable, and I can't see it ever happening.
But why shouldn't we be doing it? When we got 20% of the prison population at the moment are non-Irish, when only 12% of the population are non-Irish, that means it's disproportionate. So surely it's in our interest to understand why more non-nationals commit crimes than Irish people statistically, according to the prison service, and the fact that there's 20% non-Irish in general. jail, and there's only 12% non-Irish in the country. So surely it's in our interest to understand why that's the case.
It might work for a census, but it certainly won't work within the confines of law. The law dictates that you cannot discriminate based on colour, creed or religion. You simply can't. So if you were to argue this as a case law point of view, from a case law point of view, you're going to fail automatically. And they can quite legitimately seek compensation for you know daring to suggest that it's a Muslim crime, not a religious other Catholic crime.
But if you're saying under equality law that it would be discrimination, right? Because you know we're discriminating against colour, creed, or whatever it is. If we go under equality law, if that's the case, we shouldn't even keep a record of whether somebody's a man or a woman, because under the Equality Act they're also protected too. So where do you draw the line then when it comes to keeping statistics? Surely we're entitled to keep statistics. How their statistics are used is a different situation.
It's a form of prejudice. I mean, I'm agreeing with everything you were saying, Niall, but it is a form of prejudice. And they have a right to be protected against any type of prejudice or bias, no matter what colour they are or what religion they are. And that is the law in this country. They don't extend the same right to us, by the way, when we go over to theirs.
No,
there's the dichotomy.
Yeah.
No, they do not. Absolutely not. If you're a woman, you're fecked. You know?
Do me a favour. Well, hang on, stay there a second. Let me go to Belinda as well. Stay with me, Edward. Belinda, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. Belinda, do you believe we should be keeping statistics on nationality or ethnicity when it comes to crimes? According to Edward, we can't do that because that's discrimination.
No, definitely we should be. Because we have to know whether that's a way of life for these people or is it an individual belief. And if it's a way of life for them, for their culture, then we could control who comes into the country. You know, I mean, I'm comparing data from other European countries just to make sure that it's, you know, it's not an individual thing, that it could be a cultural thing and it could be in their belief.
But we know it is culture. But you don't have to guess that. We know, Belinda, that many of the crimes that are committed are due to the fact that people have different cultures or different beliefs of what they believe is right and wrong. So we know that.
Yeah, but I think it's important to know where they're from. You know, just so that you can monitor it better.
I understand the point you make. But here's the thing. So let's say we'll talk about crimes of a sexual nature, right? Sexual assault.
Yeah.
And let's say you find out that, I don't know, 5% of people who committed a crime of sexual assault were from Afghanistan, right? Let's say you find that out, okay? So what are you going to do? What can we do with that figure? Because the argument is those people are here already. They live here. Can't chuck them out. So how do we deal with it? Do we then just stop letting people from Afghanistan into the country? And you can't do that because then you're discriminating against everybody from Afghanistan who might not be a criminal. So the argument is, why is it important?
I don't know. I just think it's important to keep the data so other countries, in this country and other European countries, can keep an eye on that particular group of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I know you can't do much about it. They're monitoring. You can't support them. But then again, if they're illegally here, you can deport them.
Only if they're illegally here, yes.
Yeah, most likely they will be illegally here.
Well, you don't know about that. Because most people in this country, most of the lefties in this country don't believe there's any such word as illegal.
Well, there actually is such thing as illegal. But, you know what I mean?
Sorry, Edward.
She will be.
The very thing that this woman is hoping to achieve could actually work in their favour. It could actually guarantee their release. You know, I mean, that is the difficulty we have in this country. I mean, it's the opposite, obviously, in places like Dubai. But here, if you prejudice against somebody who has the right of innocence, you know, who's presumed innocent before they're guilty, and you turn around and say, well, that's a Muslim crime, or you're part of a Pakistani rape gang like they have in the UK. You know, they couldn't walk straight out the door just on that point alone, and that's our law, and that's designed to protect everybody, and it protects Muslims as well. So there's the challenge.
Okay, well, stay there for a second. Let me go to Joseph as well. Joseph, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. I'm going to take an extreme point on this. So let's say we shouldn't report on any crimes at all, ever. Every day the news should just say the country's wonderful, we're all doing great, lads. That's what we should do, isn't it?
That's not the suggestion, but the argument is, and I get what Edward is saying, is that when you start to nail it down and say, you know, I don't know, Afghanistan's committed 3% to crime, Nigerians committed 4% to crime, you know, Irish people Irish nationals committed, you know, 72% to crime or whatever it is. And you're kind of automatically discriminating against people or racially profiling people, because then other people will go, well, then I better keep an eye on those Afghanistanis or those Nigerians or those, you know what I mean? And that's the argument they make.
No. And that argument is complete trash. It is an infantile argument. Complete shit. Look, the news and reporting statistics, their goal is to tell us the reality of the situation we're living in. And everyone has to have that information. And then how they behave based on that is up to them entirely. Now, if you are, filming a racist and you're looking for any excuse to hate someone, you will. It doesn't matter what we say. As long as we're saying the truth of the situation. Now, you can say that, okay, look, Afghanis are overrepresented in rape, right?
By the way, I don't know if that's the case. I'm just using that as an example. Yeah.
No, we're okay. Using that as an example. Let's say it's Swedish people who are burdening every house, and let's say it's Canadians who are doing all the pickpocketing. You know, it doesn't matter as an example, but we need to know that, look, these people are over.
Okay, so here's the argument, and I get the point you're making, and I think that's useful information, but what are you going to do about it?
What can you do
with that information? Can you go around surveilling or staking out every Afghanistani or every Canadian who might be a pickpocket at an event? Or, I mean, you can't. I mean, you can't tar everybody with the same brush.
No, but you have to decide a practical solution to that situation so that, yeah, it's not causing, you know, an out-group hate. What you have to do is to say, okay, look, what we're going to do is we're going to do some more background checks on any, you know, Canadian coming in to see if the local police have ever picked them up for pickpocketing. And then you can say, okay, look, based on that, you know, we're not going to let you enter into the country, or we're going to have a police officer knock around your house every 2 months and just say, hi, have a quick chat, and, you know, see that you're a good standard citizen. It doesn't have to be anything severe or draconian, but it has to be, look, this is the background race for Irish population. And if there's any group, doesn't matter which group, who are statistically outside that range, then yeah, we have to take measures to protect against it. Because
so what do you do? If a particular group or ethnicity has committed a lot of crime, do we turn around and say, well, let's not let any more of them in? Is that what we do?
No, you don't have to take it in totality. You don't have to say everyone. You have to say, okay, we're going to take, you know, some strict measures to make sure, depending on the crime. If it is, you know, these rape gangs that they have up in England, well, we have to see, okay, you know, let's dive a little bit deeper into that.
Okay. I'm sorry, Joseph, but I know you're kind of busy there at the moment and there's a lot of noise in the background. Edward... I understand the point Joseph was making. So you can be stricter in relation to certain nationalities or ethnicities if you believe they're involved predominantly in a certain type of crime. So when they do enter the country, you can focus very much your background checks on that kind of information. Would that be fair?
Well, it would be fair to a point, but I think what you need to do is you need to treat each individual on their merits. If we do, as you said, take a broad stroke approach to a whole religion and go all xenophobic on them, we're in danger of turning whole communities against each other. And that's not fair. That's not fair, Niall. We cannot do that, because I know a lot of Muslims who are very decent, hardworking people.
Yes, as
and
I do.
Wouldn't even... Mm. I do, yes. And they wouldn't even contemplate treating girls or women the way some of their colleagues do. And that's can put
across... But does that not contradict your first argument when I said to you that it all depends on the interpretation of the Quran? Because you said to me, you know, that Muslims are quite serious about their religion, unlike Christians, where many of them are quite à la carte.
Yes, but what they need to do, what they need to recognize is once they're living here, when in Rome, you behave yourself. And there's some of them who are intelligent enough, and I use that word lightly now, intelligent enough to recognize that they cannot conduct themselves the way they would back in the likes of Syria or Afghan.
Okay, stay there for a second, Edward, if you can. Speaking to Edward in relation to this, and also Alex Phillips, a TV presenter earlier on, who was talking about, as a woman, how dangerous it was or she felt in London and why we're not recognising or keeping statistics in relation to, you know, nationalities or ethnicity when it comes to crime figures. Councillor Malachy Steenson joins us as well. Malachy, good afternoon to you. Malachy, you heard Edward.
Good afternoon.
Although those figures may be useful somewhat, there's not a lot we can do with them. It would be discrimination, and it would be just wrong to keep those kind of statistics.
Well then, Noel, why do we say that when a youngster is charged here and comes from Crumlin or the inner city or Talla, that we instantly say where they're from? So surely that's discriminatory. if your argument that
somebody's not... Well, it probably is to some degree, isn't it?
But there's none of the left are saying that we shouldn't identify those people. It seems that it's okay to identify and marginalise our own native people, but not those who have just come into the country. And
that's not written at law, Monica. That's not written at law.
No, but it's practice. And what needs to happen is, well, firstly, if somebody comes in here as a guest and they break the law, they should be put on a plane and sent back to where they came from.
I don't think anyone disagrees. I don't think anyone disagrees with that, by the way.
Right? Well,
the government too.
the government and the whole NGO and political class in this country, backed up by the left, disagree with that position. But what we have coming into this country now is not the doctors and the surgeons that we're told we're getting. They're the lowest of the low. They're people who have moved through Europe and mainly ended up, a lot of them, in the UK or other
countries. Not all of them.
The majority of the people coming in to apply for asylum have been in other European countries for many years. The government itself admits that. That's why they're stopping buses on the border and checking trains. Most of them are coming in from the UK. We said this almost 2 years ago. The government now concedes that that's the case.
By the way, if the government 2 months ago said, you know, oh, there's a huge problem returning people to the United Kingdom because the High Court had ruled that the Rwanda plan, of course, meant that Britain was an unsafe country. I mean, now that Keir Starmer has abandoned the Rwanda plan, does that not mean that we can just send everybody back to the UK now?
Well, Niall, If that was the reason why we couldn't send people back, why, before that decision was made and long before the Rwanda plan was ever even heard of, did we refuse to deport people who failed in their asylum applications? Why did we then grant an amnesty for all of those people who hadn't left when they were asked to self-deport? You know, this is just the government trying to play to the middle ground and pretend that they're doing something. The same as
getting back to
rent a plane, which will never happen.
Oh, well, the tenders are supposed to be in this week for that, aren't they? I don't know why they want the planes now, to be honest with you, because I said, with the Rwanda plan gone, you know, a boat over to Liverpool would be grand. Anyway,
we don't need a plane, Niall. We need to just close the borders.
Okay, well, down the Irish Sea, I assume you're talking about.
How are we going to do that, Malachy? How are we going to close the borders under the EU agreement, you know?
Hold on.
Let me do that.
I don't care about any agreements we have, right? The responsibility of the people who rule this country is to the people who are born here, to the Irish nation. And a country that can't secure its border has no right to even call itself a country or a nation. We have to secure our borders. And if that means policing the border between the six counties and here and turning people back at the airports, then that's what you do. We're an island nation, it's relatively easy.
Michael Maliki, that's all fine in principle, but it's just impossible. At this moment in time, we cannot govern our own border.
Why can't we?
We're an island for starters, okay? We have no defence forces. We have no Garda Síochána that we can commit to that level of you know, governing.
That's not a can't. That's a won't.
Look,
we won't do it. We can't do it.
At this moment, we have a flood of them coming in every which way but loose. They're coming in through Belfast, which is wide open. They're coming across the border, left, right, and centre, Donegal. They're coming across to Letterkenny. They're coming through every gap in the hedge that you can think of.
You secure the border. What are you saying? We just allow this to continue. We allow the houses.
Maliki, as an ex-Republican, you know more than anybody else how difficult it is. As an ex-Republican, you would.
I'm not an ex-Republican, Niall.
Ex-Republican supporter.
I'm a Republican. I'm an active Republican. Okay, I always have been. I'm a nationalist.
As a Republican, Maliki, well, you know more than anybody else how difficult it is to secure the border of Northern Ireland. And secondly, why would we want to do that, considering Ireland, we value the common travel area and we have for years? Now, I know, I know Pádraig Tobin had suggested the border down the Irish Sea. That's not such a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. We need a border. You can't, because you can't stop people travelling into the six-county state from mainland UK. Right? Because the people in the six-county state, backed by the political apparatus down here and by the people who had a different vote but effectively voted for the GFA, said that the six-county state was part of the United Kingdom until the Secretary of State up there decided to have a border poll where a majority up there would change it. And that's what the provisional leadership
I don't want to go too deeply into this today, but what are you envisaging, Maliki? You know, soldiers or the Garda Síochána standing on every road that enters Northern Ireland? I don't know how many there is. There's about 27 of them, I think, or something like that. Are you envisaging, you know, checkpoints again?
The point is actually over 400 border crossings.
Yeah, and then not only that, you can cross through the mountains and you can cross through fields and all sorts. So look, that's an impossibility. Let me get away from that question because we're doing is muddying the water in the debate here. Getting back to crime statistics, Maliki, you know, if I turn around to you today and said, okay, the crime statistics for sexual assaults last year were, you know, I don't know, 3% Afghanistani, you know, 2% Nigerian, 4% Indian, 7% Pakistani, 72% Irish national, what are you going to do with those statistics? What can you do with them? What difference does it make? And that's the point that Edward is making. What does it do?
Well, on one hand, it'll make no difference, because the criminal justice system in this country is totally broke. But what people are entitled to know, because, you see, the state keeps saying, right, that there's no link between immigration and crime. In other words, that crime hasn't gone up because of immigration, right? If you go to any of the courts in this country, you will see a large number of non-nationals before the courts. So it's fair to assume that those people, if they weren't in the country, that those particular crimes wouldn't have been committed by them. Isn't that?
Well, 20% of the prison population is also non-national. There was also a statistic in the paper 2 years ago where they said that non-nationals get longer sentences statistically than Irish nationals. And I don't know
why. That's not true.
Well, according to a statistic in the Irish Times, I was looking at it, yeah.
Right. Well, I take nothing the Irish Times tells me as the truth.
Okay.
It's argued in mitigation in many, many cases that because somebody is a non-national or their first language isn't English, that therefore prison on them will be harder. And that gets
But are you proposing a Muslim sex offenders register? Is that what you're proposing?
I didn't mention Muslims.
No, but that's what I'm
We already have a sex offenders register. I didn't mention Muslims.
I'm talking about all
non-nationals. I didn't mention Muslims whatsoever. Because this is not a religious argument.
Sorry, Edward, say that again.
No, that's what's underpinning much of his narrative. He's saying, look, if we need a register, we need a database of certain offenders, which suggests to me that there will be a Muslim register. Okay, because they're one of the biggest offenders.
Hold on. I haven't mentioned registers. We're talking simply about whether the media should report on the nationality of criminals or people who are charged before the court, rather than cover that up.
Where would that data be held?
I mean, Maliki, I am as concerned as you are at the amount of people who come into the country and the fact that we don't check many people coming into this country and the fact that many of them do commit crimes and the fact that many women have said to me they feel unsafe. I'm equally as concerned as you. But the argument I'm just making is, in relation to this particular topic on the show today, what difference does it for you to know right now at this very moment in time that, you know, as I said, Afghanistani or Nigerian or Indian or Pakistani were responsible for X amount of crimes last year? What does that change?
Whatever about the right to know.
So the lefties will argue, this is what the lefties will say to you. If you put out those kind of figures, well, then what happens is, on a certain type of crime, you're going to racially profile individuals.
And you'll be accused of being far right.
Okay, yeah. For instance, well, I'm already accused.
I'm accused of that daily anyway, so yeah.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For instance, there are certain areas in working class communities, particularly in this country, that people would not feel safe walking through, right? Yep. Why is that?
Because they're dangerous and they have high levels of crime.
Well, how do you know it's a danger?
Because
the media told you.
Yeah.
And they identified a lot of crime being committed in those
areas. Okay, so I would be dubious walking through Cherry Orchard, because obviously Cherry Orchard has appeared in the media quite substantially over the last few years in relation to the Garda being attacked and everything else. But that's a fact, isn't it?
Yes, but if you have an area, say, that's populated by one of the nationalities that's involved in a particular type of crime, and are concentrated in that particular area. And there are areas in this city which are populated by different nationalities, more than others, right? Haven't you a right to know that that area is possibly unsafe?
Sorry, Edward, you can respond to that if you want.
I can. I mean, I think the much easier solution here, rather than start shutting
We're losing your phone there, Edward. Sorry, go ahead.
We need to do what they've done in the UK is start to educate our population into the concerns that we have here. And what we're raising today is obviously some very serious concerns about what we're bringing into this country. Educate women especially.
It clearly hasn't worked in the UK.
But by the way, just to mention as well on the story that you mentioned in relation to Tory Towie at the start of the show, Edward, breaking news there. Taoiseach Simon Harris has told the Dáil that the travel ban on Tory Towie, the Irish woman who is facing criminal charges in Dubai, has now been lifted so she can come home. So thankfully, that's a nice ending to a very distressing case.
She can come home because she's still charged and she still presumably have to appear in court. So, I mean, you know, so...
Well, at least the travel ban has been lifted, because, but I mean, that's one thing. But as we were talking about it earlier, Marika, let's not get into it now, Eddie. Let me go to Jessica. Jessica, hi, how are you?
How are you?
How are you doing, Jessica? Okay, just in relation to this particular story, I mean, do you believe that we should keep statistics?
I know you're saying, like, what use is it, but what harm is it to have them? Now, before anyone says, like, oh, but the lefties will say this and the other, the lefties will say more than their prayers. And they throw the race card and the racism card.
They don't, but they don't say their prayers. You're right.
But they cry racism and racist, like the boy who cried wolf. That's what they're like. So literally, find any reason to use that kind of card.
Yeah, well, their argument is that you'll racially profile. Do you know what I mean? Or that the Garda Síochána for Stop and Search will racially profile if statistics are available, which kind of say things.
Yeah, but Matthew said himself, I could get arrested tomorrow, God forbid now, if I committed a crime. I could get arrested tomorrow and all over the papers it'll say Jessica from Finglas. And instantly everyone thinks, oh yeah, of course she's from Finglas. Look what comes from Finglas. Like, how's that fair?
I mean, it is a fair point, Edward, that Malachy and Jessica raised, that, you know, we do see regularly the paper, you know, John or from Tala or Mikko from Ballyfermot or Jessica from Finglas or whatever commit a crime. And we, you know, I suppose we do have an idea or a notion.
She's from Bars Bridgewood.
Yeah, we did the same with the travelling community. We did that years ago until they started the Scream Blue murder and got a representative to enact an anti-traveller discrimination bill.
People are entitled to know that a huge amount of the break-ins in country properties where old people are living are done by roving traveller gangs, and that has
Malachy, I'm not arguing against what you're saying. I'm saying merely the logistics of trying to put in place some sort of legislation or some sort of database that will identify these people is the challenge.
We have databases that are telling us that 200 years ago it was 1% colder or warmer or whatever the current thing is. You know, we've databases for everything that the woke liberals want.
You've got to be realistic. You can't just go in with a hammer and sickle approach to this problem. The better problem is not let them in at the
hammer
second.
And sickle. That's not us.
No. Hear me, please. Just don't let them in at the first place.
Well, I think Malachy would agree with that point. So I just come back to Jessica because I didn't let her say very much. Jessica, as a woman, right? Do you feel less safe now than you would have, say, 10 years ago? Because that's what Alex Phillips was saying at the start of the show, that as a woman, she feels less safe when, you know, many people from different nationalities and different cultures in the country. Do you feel less safe?
Well, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who thinks, like, we already, when you think about it, if you're a woman walking downtown at night, you already have enough to worry about with our own scumbags without thinking, like, where everyone else is coming from. And I'm not trying to say that to be bad, but like I wouldn't even dare walk downtown at night by myself, and I wouldn't even let Ciara, if Ciara even suggested to me like, oh, I'm going into town tonight, blah blah blah. I was saying, not without me or not.
Oh, you're like our bodyguard.
I know people say like, oh, but she's her own person. She can do what she wants. Not in this day and age. The fact that there's crap everywhere. Like I wouldn't be able to live with myself if something happened to her and I wasn't there.
So what you're saying is not only do you feel unsafe sometimes on our own scumbags, but it matters more now, you believe, than it did before.
Oh, 100%. Especially like when you, and I know it's hard to keep kind of bringing it up, but especially since Ashley Murphy's case, like that's been stuck in my head for the past, what, 2-3 years now? That was out. Like I still can't stop thinking about when I heard that on the news.
You know, a lot of people, a lot of women in particular, feel the same way when it comes to the Ashley Murphy case. Let me just
say that. Entitled.
Yeah,
yeah, no, she's perfectly entitled to feel that, Niall. And more importantly, I'll tell you something, there's a few other characters within the Dáil that should feel unsafe. Leo Varadkar, Roderick O'Gorman, they'd be sacked off the top of a building if they were in Dubai.
Well, but certain countries in the world, certainly they would be. Yeah, I always find it, by the way, odd when I see, you know, these kind of groups, Queers for Palestine or whatever it is, with their flag, you know, and I go, yeah, I don't know if you want to go to Palestine and see how you get on there, if you want to wave that flag around a little bit and see what happens. I find it kind of a bit weird and disingenuous. Let me go to John if I can. Thank you, Jessica, for that. John, hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Just there was a comment made just briefly there, one or 2 minutes ago, that we should educate our own Irish women or maybe of the dangers of other cultures, and the way the male, obviously, of the species looks at Irish women. Right now, my answer back to that is, why should we have to educate all Irish women on the dangers of these people? Because simply, we were doing okay until all this kind of stuff started to change and people came in from other cultures who look at women basically like just as sexual objects and just for procreation, just to have kids, that's all. They have no respect for them. They have no respect for their rights whatsoever. And it, as that lady has said there, it all changed with Ashley Murphy. Where I walk, where I live, there's a lake just up the road from me, and I walk there every night for fitness. And when it started to get dusk, you could see, and if there's very, sometimes you're a lot of people there, sometimes you might get only a handful of people. But when the girls are running now, you can see the body language now has changed. You can see the way they look. They won't make eye contact with you, but people would salute you before, girls. Now they look away. They speed up and they're passing you, right? Their whole body, the demeanor changes. That's all on the back of what happened to Ashley Murphy. That change that lady has said there, it changed the whole mindset of women going out jogging on their own, even maybe one or two going out together, going to quiet areas, walking home at night, whatever. All that has been taken by one dirty, rotten scumbag who we took in here, gave him everything, and this is how he repaired the Irish people. No, you had the case where the child was stabbed in Dublin, right? And we saw what transpired from that, the riots, okay? Yeah. And the judge then, when this guy came to court, he told the media they weren't to report on it, whatever. For the simple reason, a lot of people didn't know what the nationality he was, right? They were afraid that it would kick off another riot, and maybe a riot every single night.
But here's the thing. The point Edward is making is, and I understand the point, and I understand the point Malik is making. I'm listening to everybody today. But does it matter in a sense of what difference does it make, apart from satisfying our own curiosity and for us to go, there you go, I told you so, what difference does it make to know statistically the nationality of or the nationalities of people who commit certain crimes?
But you know, like it's matter, here's the ludicrous idea, that's the way it's so, like, the people up in courts every day, our local paper, the Echo there, whatever, you see stuff online, whatever, or the Dublin papers, the local papers, like our Echo. I mean, what's the point? So-and-so is up in court, so there, right? And his address is given there, Knocknaheeny Cork, or Mehan Cork, or Tuachal Cork, or...
Well, yeah, but no, hold on. But if Johnny from Afghanistan appears in court for a crime, his name and address is also put in the paper. It's up to you to figure out where he's from. But his name and address is also in the paper.
It may not be. It may not be. No. There are many cases where the identity of non-nationals are not disclosed.
But only if it's a crime of a sexual nature. No. Similar to any Irish person, that would be...
No. That is not true. In a number of cases recently where there have been attempted child abductions by non-nationals.
But would that not be because it involves a minor?
Hold on. No, that's not the reason that the withholding of the name was done. It was done to prevent further unrest.
No. Hang on. I want to clarify this, Maliki. So let's talk about the lad in Pierce Street who allegedly tried to take two children, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So he hasn't been in court yet. He hasn't, I'm assuming he's been charged. I'm not too sure of the story, but has he been charged?
As far as I know, he was charged, right?
Okay. If you're charged in Ireland and it doesn't matter where you're from, what it'll say in the paper is, and in the court records, a man in his 40s has been charged.
No.
Right?
No,
it won't say their name until you appear in court.
Hold on. He has appeared in court, right? And the court ruled that his name wasn't to be disclosed by the media because it would create possible civil disobedience on the streets.
Yep.
So who said that? The judge?
It is correct. The judge said
that is correct, Miles. That is correct.
Malik is correct. So,
Then, Edward, that goes against everything that we're talking about today. If the judge turns around and says something like that, because surely that information should be freely available, because if it was Irish and he was from Finglas, we'd all know
John
about
it. From Tala, we would know about it. Yeah. And you would have
these
all over the paper. Yeah. And compare
It would say a man from... It would say, if they're just being charged, it would normally say a 44-year-old man from Finglas.
Compare that to what happened in the same week when you had the Newtown, Mount Kennedy, and four people, I think, were charged. Their names, addresses, and photographs were splashed across
dreadful.
The media instantly.
No, that was, hold on. That was the Irish Mirror, I think, wasn't it? That was despicable. These were four people who were arrested under the Public Order Act, right? And whatever, they obviously have to go to court or whatever else. But they were arrested under the Public Order Act. They're not murderers. But they were put in the front of the paper like they were four murderers. It was absolutely awful.
No.
Yeah.
And the very people who should be in the front of that paper are the thugs that are in the public order unit, that battered people along the street, sovereign Irish people, battered by the public order unit. They are the thugs that should be in front of of that paper.
I know. I did agree with that particular headline was wrong. And by the way, you can't blame the government for that. You blame the media for that. But Malachy, and I wasn't aware that a judge said in that particular case that the person's identification wasn't to be brought up because it may cause civil disobedience. I wasn't aware of that. And that's wrong as well. That's equally as wrong.
But the Gardaí are complicit in this as well, Niall. Let's not forget. They're deliberately...
They're acting on the instructions of...
Well, whatever the instructions. But we've the same problem in the UK. An MP, David MS, was murdered by a Muslim asylum seeker last year. Okay. And the political and media establishment tried to gaslight the public into thinking that the cause of the murder was due to people being rude on Twitter. That's a load of shite. Yeah. Okay. It was...
Sorry, we're losing you there, Edward. There you go. Maybe some sort of conspiracy theorist will say somebody's interfering with our phone lines. Go ahead. Yeah, sorry. Go on.
He was basically repeating an awful lot of what Alex Phillips said in the earlier part of your interview, that we have a problem here, Houston, and nobody wants to pay attention to it. And he was murdered, but it was put down to the fact that he was being rude to the Muslim community. And that was the reason for it. It was certainly nothing of the sort.
But by the way, even if he was being rude to the Muslim community, or if somebody, that still has a reason to take a man's life. Anyway.
No, of course not.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, John. Yeah, good, John, quickly. I've got to go to Madeline there. Go on, John.
Yeah, it's not too long ago, I think. I necessarily drink this up, but I don't think it is. But McEntee, she actually said that anyone that has become an Irish citizen and that commits a serious crime, that the citizenship should be revoked and they should be deported.
They haven't passed legislation on that yet, but there was a suggestion that legislation should be implemented, yes.
Well Noel, Noel, I just want to say two things first. Just remind people that there's a national mobilisation at the Garden of Remembrance on Saturday, the 13th at 2 o'clock, that's this Saturday, against the EU Migration Pact. So, it doesn't seem to be getting the traction out there that it should.
Saturday the 13th. What time? Saturday the 13th, what time?
2 o'clock at the Garden of Remembrance.
2 o'clock
at the
Garden of Remembrance. Okay.
Now, just in relation to people who get citizenship here as opposed to us who are native citizens, you have to swear loyalty to the state and fidelity to the nation, or the other way around. So you take a note to that. So if you're convicted of a crime, then you've broken that oath. So you're automatically, you should be stripped of your citizenship.
I think that should go without saying. I was surprised that wasn't a thing already, by the way. When it was suggested there, going back a couple of weeks ago, that we should bring in, and you know, understand this better than me, Malachy, that we have to bring in legislation for that. Is that not already in legislation?
Well, I don't think there's no legislation to prohibit it. So in life, you can do anything you want unless the law says you can't. So there's no... So let them go and strip the citizenship off these people and see what happens. Just put them on a plane. And, you know, I'm sick and tired of hearing, you know, of some incident abroad somewhere and an Irish citizen is involved. And it turns out there was probably somebody who never even set foot in the country. Mm. You know, and they just happen to have an Irish passport. You know, and of course then they never actually tell you that bit. But when you look into it, you find those things. But, you know, there's something dysfunctional in this country. Well, there's a lot of things dysfunctional. And we're on a very slippery slope. If you look at the amount, the levels of immigration in this country, over 20%, one in five people in this country weren't born here. You imagine translating that to any other country in Europe or in the world. It just simply doesn't happen.
Okay, I got to get quickly through these. Madeline, hi, how are you, Madeline?
Hi, Niall. Just Malachy making that point about the Garden of Remembrance on Saturday at 2 p.m. The amount of people that haven't a clue about this, because he's right, it's getting no traction. We're like a rudderless ship at the moment. I'm delighted to hear Malachy on there this morning. I'm a big fan of himself and yourself, Niall.
Just call him Malachy. Call him Councillor Malachy. It makes him feel good.
I've never called anybody by that title in my life, and I'm not
Councillor
Steens.
Councillor Steenson.
Yeah. But we've no proper political leadership here at all, and people are absolutely out there like headless chickens at the moment. They want to hear people like yourself, Niall, and like Malachy, talking about what's right for this country, but we are not getting it at all. Now, you're talking about closing borders and stuff around the country. The NGOs stop handing out free stuff, and our financials stop handing out money. These people will stop coming. There's an easy solution.
Well, they're doing quite the opposite, Madeline, because it was suggested yesterday that the 800 quid a month that's given currently to Ukraine's to set up, you know, to stay in somebody's house, for example, for 90 days when they come here first, should also now be given to asylum seekers.
No, I know loads of people, thousands of people feel like this. If the NGOs disappear tomorrow and the money that's been handed out freely to these people, if it wasn't there, these people wouldn't be coming over. It's scandalous looking at what's happening in the city there with those tents. It's absolutely scandalous. They're dumping them tents into the water and they're replaced the same bloody day.
Can I get back to the original question of the show was, is it necessary, because we don't have crime statistics at the moment in relation to nationality, do you believe it's important that crime statistics include nationality and ethnicity?
They would have happened to start that a long time ago, because we have imported an awful lot of criminals here that nobody seems to know who they are or where they come from. And stats prove world over that men commit more crimes than women. Mm-hmm. And we're imposing them by the lorry load here, men who are sitting around all day with nothing else to do, only intimidate white Irish women. There's nobody in our feckin' parks anymore now because people are afraid to go out walking. I never had a problem up until the last 2 years now about going for a walk in a park. And I think it's disgraceful. Our government, our Garda have let us down totally. We have no protection. We have no leadership. It's an absolute abysmal disgrace.
Thank you for that, Madeline. All right, let me just go to Albert as well before I finish up today as well. Albert, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, how are you?
I'm good,
Albert. Just a couple of points. Look, you're talking about statistics. Well, I mean, everything in the courts that goes through the courts, the prison service, the guards, all those statistics are there already. They're just not being released.
Mm.
And in regards to profiling people, well, let's be honest, you can look at, you know, Eastern Europeans and you can say, well, you know, if you could profile them off the top of your head by saying, well, it's people trafficking, prostitution, they're stealing cars to order and sending the parts back to Eastern Europe. The Romas, Romanians, you can say that the most of them coming over here are pickpockets. You can look at Muslims and other people from the Middle East, and you can almost say, well, you know, when they come here, just the type of crime they commit. I mean, it's already there.
I'm not disagreeing. There's a disproportionate amount of crime committed by individuals of certain ethnicities and belief systems, right? But here's the thing, and the point Edward is making from the start is, what difference does it make that you know these things? Because there's nothing we can do to change that. In other words, I agree with Malachy, and I agree with Edward, and Edward also agrees that we shouldn't be letting in people that we don't know who they are, we don't know what their backgrounds are, they have no identification, all that kind of stuff. And people like that should be deported. But knowing the statistic or the nationality of somebody or the ethnicity of somebody doesn't solve the crime. It doesn't stop the crime from happening. And we can't do anything about it because the guards can't keep an open eye on it, because that's considered to be racial profiling. So where do you go? What difference does it make to know these things?
Niall, it's common knowledge.
Hang on, Edward. Just let Albert answer that question. Sorry, Albert.
Yeah. No, the thing is that, you know, first of all, we can't do anything about people within the EU and the free movement of people. But if they come here, they must come here to work. And a lot of them come here and don't work. And then they go into crime. If you look at a lot of the Eastern Europeans who are here, if they're not working, then what are they doing? So are they in crime? We just have to try and start following up on people. If they don't have, if they're not working, they're doing something else or doing something nefarious. But the real part is the illegal people who are coming in here, because we don't seem to be able to follow them, track them, or anything about them. And I mean, somebody made a very good point there about, the girls, running around the park or the lake. And I mean, they're looking at everybody suspiciously now because of what's gone on before. And I mean, it's bad enough for our own scumbags over here, but now we're importing them as well. But how do we get rid of them? Look, the thing is, it's one strike and they're gone. It's none of this going into prison or NGOs sticking up for them or anything else.
Yeah, I was going to say good luck with that.
And they're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have seen people have come to this country, as Maliki calls them, guests of our nation, come from this country, or come into this country, and commit reasonably serious crimes, and serious crimes, including rape and sexual assault, be released from jail and back into society again, not deported.
Not only that, but they're in jail for a fraction of the time that they should be in jail for.
Sorry, Edward, what are you trying to say, Edward?
I was going to ask for that. One of the largest mosques
in Dublin. Move your phone back to your face there, Edward. Sorry, I can't hear you.
One of the largest mosques in Dublin,
Clunsky,
has links to the extreme Muslim Brotherhood. Okay, it's the headquarters of the European Council for Fatwa and Research. And they have chaired for quite a few years the now deceased radical cleric Yusuf al-Qaradawi. He supported murdering gays, ex-Muslims and Israelis. Now that is right under our noses and nobody's paying attention to him.
Well, I suppose it's like arguing that, I mean, there was people had mentioned, for example, the ECR grouping in the EU when I was running for the election. Somebody asked me who I was going to join, and I had told people who I knew that I would join the ECR. I certainly wasn't going to tell the media because they would have made a big story out of it and tried to lose me votes. But here's the thing. People said, oh, you do realise some of the characters that were in the ECR over time, many of them, would have been homophobic and called for death for homosexuals, etc., etc. And I'm going, yeah, but that's not me. And those individuals, I can't be responsible for everybody within the group, nor is the group responsible for everybody within the group. So I would say, I would make the same argument to you, Edward, in relation to that. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that isn't the case, and I'm sure what you're saying is absolutely true, but that doesn't mean that everybody that visits that mosque or everybody who's part of that mosque endorses that kind of behaviour.
Of course not.
You know what I mean?
Of course not, but that is part of the Quran. That is part of their religion.
No, I know. And again, it goes down to interpretation. And you are right, more people who are Islamic would interpret their religion a lot more seriously than people who are Christian, particularly in this country. But there are Christians around the world who interpret Christianity, different parts of Christianity, in a very serious manner. I want to go to Lorenzo.
But where does sanctioning murder, come into that? It doesn't dilute my point. You know?
Okay, stay there for a second. Let me go to Lorenzo. Lorenzo, hi, how are you doing? Hi, Lorenzo. Sorry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Niall, how are you?
I'm good. What do you want to say?
Well, I think that it makes not much of a sense to know where they come from and who does what. Firstly, because it can be racist profiling in terms of, if it comes out that Italians do something, then do you count that I do the same? Or, what the purpose of the information has no sense. And I know even from an Italian point of view is the same in Italy in terms of 70% of crimes in Italy are committed by Italians, but always the not Italians are the one making the news and saying, they commit all crimes. They don't. It's 70% against 30. So I presume that I don't remember the percentage that you were saying, but
20% of people in this country in jail, it's 20% are non-national or non-Irish.
So
okay, and the amount of people who are non-Irish in this country is 12%. So it is a disproportionate amount, but in saying that, not hugely disproportionate.
Yeah, there isn't. So it's always nice and it's always easier to blame somebody else instead of your own kind of people, pass me the term. It's easier to say, it's somebody else instead of the Irish, but it basically everybody commits crime. So, and from my point of view, all Italians I know, we are basically working on the total opposite idea of, yes, we are not in our home country, we have to behave. So it basically, and plus I constantly try to fight the stereotype of, all Italians are linked to the mafia. No, we're not. We're not.
You mean you're not linked to the mafia?
No, we're not.
Ah, Lorenzo, you've disappointed me now. I thought you might have been. There you go.
But like, I mean,
do you even know? Like, do you even know Joe Pesci and Al Pacino? No, no,
no.
I understand the point. I mean, Malachi, Lorenzo makes a good point. Again, you know, just because he is Italian, if Italians were committing a certain type of crime, does that mean we all look at Lorenzo as being somebody who could possibly commit that crime? You know, that's kind of stereotyping people, and it's racial profiling people. In other words, the figures don't, you know, to know those statistics doesn't make a difference.
Of course, it's not racially profiling. I mean, Italians are not a race.
No, I'm not talking about it. You understand the point I'm making. Right? Stereotyping now, people.
Well, you see, we've had no problem in this country, in, for instance, during the conflict in the six counties, or before that even, saying that people who, for instance, had a tricolour in their house were to be despised and were somehow Republicans and lesser people than anybody else. And you were entitled to ensure that they didn't get a job and you would write whatever you wanted about them. The same in this whole campaign against open borders and uncontrolled migration into this country. Those of us who have argued against that have been called fascist and far right and all of those things. So anybody who is on our side of the fence has been demonised and has been put into a box and is subject to closer scrutiny from the state and from the, you know, the intelligence services and all of that than normal people. So they are, you know, on one hand, saying, well, we can't group everybody together when it suits them. And on the other hand, saying that, well, if you're seen talking to me, for instance, you're automatically deemed to be
far
possibly
right.
Somebody who's opposed
who are linked to the far right. Yeah.
And, you know, therefore you're targeted.
Am I now, because you're a guest on my show on a regular basis, am I linked to the far right?
Regularly accused of being on the far right.
Yeah, it's true, well, this is true. You know,
like,
well, I did have an argument campaign on Twitter with Dr. Umar Al-Qadri that, you know, I was right wing, yet I said nothing more than he said, and he's left wing seemingly. Now, he said exactly the same thing as me, but tried to claim he was left wing or socialist in some way. And yet he was the one who said we need a fair immigration policy. He was the one, by the way, on RTE, on that very first debate that I was on him, said that he wanted people removed from the state. He wanted people deported who had no identification. He said exactly the same thing as I'm saying. And then he kind of seems to switch sides towards the end. I don't know why. But in saying that, he still says the same thing. And yet he's considered left wing, but I'm right wing. It's quite bizarre. Anyway,
Simon Harris is saying exactly what we've been saying.
Yeah, but is he not right wing? So,
well, you know,
but the difference is he doesn't really. The difference: he doesn't really want to do it.
I mean what I say.
Yeah, I was just going to say the difference is he really doesn't want to do it. He's just saying it to get votes.
Yeah,
you know, that's the difference.
You have to say it again in October.
Well, I mean, look, they went all gung-ho on it, didn't they, for the 4 weeks running up to the last elections, the local and European elections. You know, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to hire planes, we're going to get rid of them, we're going to get tough, no more tents, all that kind of shite. And they haven't done any of it. And I told people at the time, don't believe them, they're liars, yeah, they won't do it.
They'll keep the narrative up till the election. That's probably as far as they can keep it going. But, you know, when we have people elected into Leinster House in October, you know, and I think it was Madeleine was saying there doesn't seem to be any leadership. Be very clear, Madeleine, this is a hugely, and this is your other listeners, we know tactically what we're doing. And we've achieved huge success in the local and European elections. And we saw the level of support that's there for people. Now, we didn't get as many seats as some people predicted. We got exactly this number of seats, particularly in Dublin, that I suspected we would get. And, you know, we know what we will get in the
general election,
national election in October. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, any of your listeners who are there, you know, there's no point in just coming onto your show and talking about this. Get out there and campaign for your local nationalist candidate in this general election. And, you know, as I keep quoting Bobby Sands, you know, he said, everyone has a role to play.
Well, Edward, by the way, you're not going to run for election, Edward, no?
Role is.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I'd last about 5 minutes in the door before they fecked me out.
Before you're brought out in handcuffs.
Anyone who has an issue with free speech in this country, I mean, forget it. You may as well move countries because, I mean, it would send a chill down your spine.
I got a chill down my spine last night when I was listening to Paul Murphy talking about the left coming together, you know, transfer left, vote left, and, you know, and he wants to go into talks with Sinn Féin.
These are the people who rang Breed Smith against...
Claire Daly.
Claire Daly,
yeah.
In order to just stop Claire Daly. The Trotskyite left can never unite about anything.
Yeah, well, look, here was the thing, and I did say that I was looking on Boyle Sports going back a while ago.
Other than the hatred of me.
Well, the hatred of you, and me possibly as well, by the way. But there was a look on Boyle Sports, and I think fifth down for the general election predictions was a Sinn Féin, Social Democrats, Green Party, People Before Profit, Labour government. And I was saying, can you imagine that? I just leave the country.
Well, there won't be a Labour Party for a start, so you can take them out of it.
I can tell you now, I would leave the country if that happened. I just packed this, and there's no point in staying.
I'm secretly delighted that you didn't get into Europe. I say that with the greatest of respect, because what you can do is you can stay at home and store shite at home, because that's exactly where you should belong. It's as if in there now at the next election, we'll make sure you get the votes and make sure you put manners on some of those feckers in the door, because that's badly needed, number one. Number two, get out half of these shitheads that we have flooding in through our doors. That's your mandate. And if ever there was a mandate, I'd make that top of your list among all other issues.
Well, I'm assuming Malik will be running for general election as well this year too.
So. No, he would not. No.
Malik, are you running for the general elections? I'm assuming you are.
I'll be standing in Dublin Central. And not for me, Niall, because this is not about me. This is about standing up for what we believe in. And it's about the future of our children and grandchildren and creating, you know, a better society.
But they will never allow the right to get a majority. Look, we see what happened in France.
There's no right in this country now.
Well, there isn't really.
They're only right so far.
Yeah, well, there was a couple of pretend rights out there, by the way, but I'm not going to talk about that today because I get into trouble. All right. Listen, Maliki, thank you very much indeed. And Edward, I appreciate
you. And remember, Saturday.
Oh, yeah, Saturday, 13th, 2 o'clock, Garden of Remembrance. And that's in relation to the EU Migration Pact as well and everything else. Listen, thank you very much indeed. Maliki, appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
Bye, Edward. Thank you to everybody who got on the show. Alex Phillips as well from the UK for coming out at the start of the show. I do apologise for the false start. We have a glitch in the system. And I have no idea what happened. But look, we shall sort it out. We shall fix it. It's one of those things. It hasn't happened to us in over a year. Thankfully, everything has run quite smoothly over the last year. But unfortunately, there just today, we lost our control over our video guest. So we had to bring him back on the phone, which was a little bit embarrassing. And hopefully it won't happen again. Keep supporting us, by the way, because all those glitches cost us money. But that means replacing something. And the only way that we can replace things and fix things and keep those glitches away is but your financial support, because we don't have advertising and we don't have any other way of making money apart from your donations and your subscriptions on our website. Go to the website, nileboylan.com. That's nileboylan.com. And you can donate there if you want to. We should talk to you again tomorrow at 12. Until then, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your patience today.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.